Hello, everybody, and welcome to GMC Episode 17, the podcast that is almost legal. I am David McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David Longo.
How are we, boys?
Very good.
Well and truly legal at this point.
I'm well and truly legal because it was my birthday this week, so...
And you just turned 18.
I did. For those... They always say that you should reverse your age because it makes you feel younger, and I can't do that anymore.
Not until you're like 51 or something.
Exactly. Yeah. But at the moment, if I reverse my age, I am like double the age that I am. So it is not a good idea. We are back. We've actually done this like 3 weeks in a row with something wrong with us.
This is episode 71 in that case. Wow.
I think next week we should do episode 72.
Yeah.
Just very quickly, first of all, this is GMC, the Geek Movie Podcast. This is where we just get together and chit-chat about movies and anything else that appeals to us, and the clubhouse is in session. I need to get a gavel sound at some point. Or an actual gavel. There you go. So that would be a good idea. We should make a quick disclaimer that there won't be a show next week. And this is actually pre-planned because we are going to be in Melbourne for Oz Comic Con. So don't be looking for an episode of GMC next week because you won't find one. And other than that, though, it's been an interesting week, I think. We've got news and rumors. We've got movies to review. We've got all sorts of wonderful stuff. So let's get started. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do some movie news in, boys.
What do we got?
Well, let's start with some of the quick stories first, because we're going to spend a bit of time talking about rumor control around a big movie.
Or lack of control.
Exactly right. This week, a teaser trailer was released for this.
Clara, be my pal. Tell me, am I a good man?
I don't think I know who the Doctor is anymore.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a release date, August 23rd or August 24th here in Australia. ABC have confirmed the fast track of that. We will be getting the 8th season of Doctor Who, the first season with Peter Capaldi.
I'm so excited!
From the sounds of this, it's going to be a little bit of a darker Doctor.
Well, they have said from the very beginning that this is kind of backtracking now. We're starting the Doctor. He's an older Doctor again, and they're going slightly back to that darker edge of the earlier Doctors. This is going to be very intriguing, I think.
I'm very excited. We've got, and it's going to be kicking off with a feature-length episode, apparently.
If only they would put it in 3D.
Are they still filming? Do you know?
I think if they are still filming, they're finishing off filming. Okay. They must be finishing filming soon because they're about to all embark on a world tour.
Sure.
Which will be, but it's like 4 continents in, 7 days or something ridiculous.
They got to watch that TARDIS. So I hope it doesn't break his leg.
The TARDIS door.
Much smaller door than the Millennium Falcon, but Star Wars a bit later. But I haven't really been following Bond 24, the 24th James Bond film. But apparently the script was in good shape, they said on Superhero Hype. And when 12 Years a Slave star Chiwetel Ejiofor was reported to be the top choice for the film's villain. But now it's been pushed back. It's been delayed due to rewrites. So there's, without an official title, Bond 24 is now scheduled to hit cinemas November 6th, 2015.
I gotta say, I stopped following James Bond news a few films ago because of the way that these films keep getting delayed. It's like not until it actually starts filming do I get excited, because the Bond films are notorious for this, where they'll just knock it back and knock it back and knock it back and then not show up at all. So it will be curious to see the next Bond film, because I really liked Skyfall. So, and it's the same director back as far as
Sam Mendes is back.
So I'm really curious to see it. But as I say, I'm not going to get too excited until I actually find out cameras have started rolling.
No, exactly right.
Please don't be the son of Bond, please. You know when they rewrite the last minute?
And it's
like, let's give him a son.
And they'll cut, Shia LaBeouf's unemployed now. So
hey. Oh, there you go. He can destroy another franchise.
And at the end, you'll come up and you'll pick the tuxedo up off the floor and go, not yet, kid. You know? David Anthony Longo, there is a story this week that you texted us about in squee-like excitement. Ooh. And tell us a little bit about it.
Pacific Rim 2.
For those of you without the proportionate hearing of a canine, he just said, Pacific Rim 2
I did.
Is scheduled for April 7th, 2017. Hey,
my favorite movie ever.
That's my friend Ivan's birthday. Happy birthday, Ivan.
Hey, Ivan.
It's also actually April 7th was interesting because I was collecting friends with the same birthday. So I had a friend named Joni at the time.
What do you do? Put them in a glass case or something?
A glass case of emotion. April 7th. April 7th, incidentally, is also the birthday of Astro Boy.
Hey, just putting that out there. There
Pacific Rim like blew my mind open. It was like my favorite movie of last year. I think was it last year or the year before?
At this
the
point,
year it came out.
At this point, you would blow Guillermo del Toro.
I would have blown Guillermo del Toro around Pan's Labyrinth, let alone this. I would go further with del Toro for this.
It's but, amazing how many blowjobs that Guillermo del Toro has announced that hasn't finished yet.
That's true.
I saw... I don't know. Look, whatever. I'm just going to ignore that. But like, you know, Pacific Rim, I saw 3 times in the cinema and twice in IMAX.
Wow.
I've read the making of the big book.
And there was a tie-in comic.
And the tie-in comic I've read, of course. Like, I was obsessed about it.
Look,
still am.
There's no secret that I didn't give it a lot of love.
Yeah, I know, which is why I'm trying to front load this so then we can get negative into it.
I'm actually not going to get that negative into it because I am. Look, we talked about at the coffee shop before we came in and recorded today that it is so fantastic from a geek's point of view.
At the local Sydney coffee shop.
At the Makina coffee shop. Hi, guys. I get my coffee there every day. But I'm going to. Look. We are all, the three of us, I think, agreed with the fact that no matter whether the films are good or bad, I mean, whether Fox is making Fantastic Four or Marvel is making great films or Pacific Rim, which I ultimately found a little bit disappointing, but I love the fact that I live in an age that these films exist.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that as a geek, I'm getting the cinema I want.
It's a giant robot versus monster film. And it's not just the sequel coming out. There's an animated series as well, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this
I think, like, look, with Pacific Rim, what set my world on fire with that movie was that, you know, it's a whole world created, these very iconic characters, these iconic robots and these iconic monsters. Like, it's to me, it's very complicated in its meaning and its theme and what it's there for. And on top of that, you know, the score is amazing. The art design is impeccable. But the deeper you get into Pacific Rim, the more that the thing opens up. And so I'd recommend listening to the audio commentary or reading into the book, into the movie, because there is so much more detail in the film than you can even possibly realize.
Yeah, but
we're talking about, like, every single shot is heavily color-coded. Like, I'll let you go.
So I was going to say, should we just play Del Toro's special announcement message?
Go for it.
Unless I didn't realize we had this here.
Good. Yeah, Del Toro's the best.
Hello, legendary fans. Guillermo Del Toro here. I'm in Toronto, Canada, finishing up Crimson Peak, a gothic tale coming your way 2015. But I have a bit of good news to share with you. From now until April 2017, we're going to develop a new animated series for Pacific Rim, continue the comic book series that we started with Year Zero, and most importantly, creating a sequel for the film. I'm working on this with Zach Penn and Travis Beecham, and we are all very happy to be bringing you more kaijus, more Jaegers, kicking each other's butt.
Say what we say about the film. I love that man.
And he goes on to say in an interview with BuzzFeed that Rayleigh, Mako, Newt, Gottlieb, and who knows, maybe even Hannibal Chow, will be returning, but we're taking them into fresh territory that will display amazing sights and battles. The first film set the stage, and now we're ready to have a blast.
Yeah. the problem that I have, Dave, and this is a controversial statement, but the problem I have is, as a person who goes and sits their fat ass down into a cinema and eats my chalk top and watches a movie, I don't want to have to work that hard to find the secret meaning or the underneath or any. I want the film to deliver it all for me. You know what I mean? So I don't want to have to go and watch a commentary or read a making of. I mean, I do this anyway.
I'm not saying you have to.
No,
enjoy
I know.
But
what I'm saying is, from just the cinema.
I didn't see the commentary until the seventh time I watched it.
But you're saying there's probably more to it than we've already given it credit.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is what I got from the film.
Yeah.
Just the film, just sitting there paying my money, and what I got from the film was a film that was visually spectacular. No doubt about it. When the Jaegers and the Kaiju were fighting, amazing. Mm-hmm. But what I got was a bunch of actors who, in particular, three of them that I have quite a deal of respect for, giving kind of substandard performances and a script that I thought was really poor, just dialogue-wise and so forth. I thought was really poor That's what I'm taking away from the film. Now, that's not to say that I didn't enjoy the film. I quite enjoyed the film when I watched it, but I kind of walked away going, well, that wasn't quite what I was expecting. And I have seen the film since on Blu-ray. In 3D and the whole bit on my big 55-inch screen. Mm-hmm. And I actually quite enjoyed it better the second time
around. David, stop telling us how many inches you've got.
Because the second time around, I actually got to see it without any anticipation. Mm-hmm. And I just got to enjoy the film for what it was.
And that's what I need to do.
And you're right. The score is really good. Mm-hmm. The sound design is amazing. The visuals. But the problem is I just felt that the film was... I think in my initial review of it, and I think it was probably a little harsh, but my initial review of it, I actually said it felt like it was written by 3 12-year-olds with crayons.
Yeah, like I massively disagree with everything you say. Like
that's okay.
Yeah, like no, fair enough. Like I respect your opinion. Like I just don't want to sort of
lead.
Yeah, but look, I might be wrong. Whatever, but fuck it.
Seriously,
but fuck
fair,
it. Because like,
no, but you've also yeah, said to, that you've to seen be it fair, three I, times.
Yeah,
I've seen this once.
Yeah,
so,
like I just don't want to leave it silent on that note. Yeah. Because like I don't
but
agree
that
with that.
But that is my personal opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
Well.
Like,
and that's how I felt about.
But I think those characters are very specifically written to be in a way.
Yeah, they're archetypes of that genre.
Yeah, you know, like. Yeah. But the thing is that what separates them from the dirge of Hollywood is that they have iconography, that they do right, and then you've got all sorts of things going on in that film that you need to pay attention to.
See,
and if you're lost in like a lot of the elements, especially in a Del Toro film where maybe I would say 95% of the information is conveyed visually,
the biggest problem was I made no emotional connection with any character.
I didn't make an emotional connection with the character, and I thought some of those archetypes that you're talking about and some of the...
moving movie
to me. This is why I need to watch it again, because the characters in particular that I didn't like were the scientist characters who were really over the top and really silly. And the funny thing is that those characters in a Japanese animated series...
would have made perfect sense.
...made perfect sense to me, and because they're an integral part of that genre, yet... to me, when they're played in live action, it doesn't work
as well.
And
that's what separates live action from animated.
Because I think there's part of our brain that switches over. And this could be the mistake of me as a viewer, that it's coming to this from a different place. You know, that I'm expecting, you know, certain live action tropes, but it's actually what we're seeing is really a big cartoon.
Mm. And don't get me wrong, Dave. I completely respect your opinion. Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'm
not saying you're wrong.
Yeah.
This is just my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, no, fair enough.
I respect your opinion too, and there's
going
to be stuff that I like that you think is complete trash.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing about subjective art. It's the fact that we can watch anything and get something out of it. You know what I mean? There are a lot of people who don't like the Sure Thing, and yet Richard and I are mad Sure Thing fans.
But let's just say this. This news came out, and despite my reservations about the first film, I saw it, and maybe it was just Dave's enthusiasm, I suddenly got excited about Pat Grimm too. Because the one thing we said, and you said it before, Dave,
I'm more excited about this than Star Wars.
But I think the fact that there's an animated series leading up to it actually makes me a little bit more excited, because I can kind of get into the mood before the movie comes out. I've kind of got this kind of vibe going. And as we've already said, the fact that we live in a world where battling monsters movie is coming out, and a sequel is coming out, an animated series coming out. I mean, these are our movies. I mean, I'm excited about the fact that these movies exist, because it will mean that other people will be inspired by Del Toro. And I'm not just talking about your Asylum films as well. I'm talking about all those other films will come out. This is we are really in a golden age for geek films.
And look, quite frankly, also in the news this week, another piece of something that we shouldn't be excited about, but you know, because we're geeks, I'm going to watch it. Fantastic Four. It came out this week that Trank is actually saying that it's going to be shot in the style of Chronicle. So we're saying we're going to have a found footage inspired Fantastic Four film. My first reaction to that is a terrible idea. But at the same time, as much as I don't want that to happen, at least there's a Fantastic Four film being made.
The four of them find an object in a cave. And we go from there. Should we talk about... David, I know you've got some music queued up.
Yes,
you've been raring to play.
I think we should play a little bit of this because it is...
Just before you do, I just want to add a cap to the Pacific thing. Really, really quickly. The fact that it is getting a sequel means that there are a lot of people that love the movie as much as I do.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Without doubt, the film made money.
Yeah, I just want to cap it by just saying I think it's a masterfully directed film that communicates everything beautifully.
Cool. So if you're on either side of the fence, mm-hmm. you've got an opinion from both sides. Yeah. So
either side of the Pacific.
Yeah. There you go.
And now we're going to get an animated series and a movie. And as I said to you guys before at the cafe, you guys might love the sequel as much as I've loved the first one.
I've got to read the comics. Because one thing he mentioned in there was that the animated series is continuing on from the narrative that the comics mm-hmm. started up. Mm-hmm. So now I want to read that and experience it all as like a one continuous piece. Like you know, all the Matrix things that came out around that. They're all sort of really expanding that world. So I want to get my headspace into that and rewatch it again.
Yeah, look, and as I say, I bought Pacific Rim on Blu-ray. So, yeah. I mean, I will watch it again. And I'm sure I'll watch a few more. Because you're right, visually it is spectacular.
And I'll watch it on your TV.
And you'll watch it on my TV. But it is time for our unsubstantiated Star Wars rumors of the week.
Can I start with this one? Because
you
it's one we can dismiss pretty quickly because it's already been dismissed. Tom Cruise, who's been in other J.J. Abrams productions, Mission something or other, visited him on the London set this week, which led to all this rumor and speculation and horror from fans that Tom Cruise was going to be...
He's playing Jabba the Hutt.
Well, no, I think...
Yeah, baby.
I think he's playing Jar Jar's cousin.
Oh,
I think.
Okay, even better.
He could be Boba Fett.
He's a Scientologist.
Well, the thing is, I mean, we were actually talking about...
Can you imagine Boba Fett crawls out of the Sarlacc pit, takes the helmet off, it's Tom Cruise?
I wouldn't mind.
Actually. I would actually go see that movie.
Because the thing is, when we're talking about Tom Cruise is actually a good actor. I don't know why people, you know, kind of just go, oh no, Tom Cruise is going to be in Star Wars. It might actually improve it. Mm. You know, who knows? Because he's a big star. Of course, it would mean that if Tom Cruise was involved, the movie would revolve
a
little bit
more
around
him. I'm going to say it on record
him.
Right here. I'm not a Tom Cruise hater.
We're not haters.
I'm not a Tom Cruise hater.
We may not be Scientologists. We may never be Scientologists.
Interesting fact, Tom Cruise was originally the original choice for Stacker Pentecost in Pacific Rim.
Well, there you go.
Interesting fact. And Tom Cruise was also the original choice for Iron Man. So let's...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting fact. I have no interesting facts about Tom Cruise. just putting that out there. But he's debunked that really quickly.
You brought an interesting fact to the table.
I brought an interesting rumor to the table, which was that...
rumors, same thing.
See, there's no truth to the rumors, and he called the Sun article, which is originally came from... Of course, the Sun in the UK is making up everything. It's pure fiction.
Using recently undiscovered evidence.
Yeah, exactly.
from dubious sources.
Yeah, we should just do a whole show based around unsubstantiated evidence.
It's magnificent. I love this section because we can make up anything we want.
Yeah.
But one
of the more convincing rumors is around the release date.
Mm. Now, this is apparently actual. Star Wars has been pushed back. Apparently, the rumors are that the injury to Harrison Ford is actually a little bit more substantial than anybody originally reported. He has broken his leg, and he is 70-something years old.
Or did someone break his leg?
And now, at 70 years old, you take a little bit longer to heal than normally.
It's because
now,
of all those gambling debts that he's got.
It's funny, actually, that how little official information has been released about
absolutely.
The
incident.
Yeah.
A friend of mine suggested that it could potentially have been a heart attack instead of a broken leg, and that he might not have broken his leg at all because, like, there is no images, there's no information released about it.
There were
reports that he was clutching his chest when
there
the
was
incident
a, well,
happened.
There was a report. There was a report that he was airlifted from Pinewood, and the report that was actually radioed in was a 70-year-old man with a leg injury.
Yeah.
So that part we kind of have as fact, but we don't know where else it would
look like. I'm just talking out of my ass, really. Like,
no, we don't know.
But that's what the section is all about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
This section is we have no idea. But what's interesting is they have actually removed the release date of Star Wars. Now, this is semi-official at this
point. Have they actually removed it?
They've actually said that they're moving it to summer the following year because they have to delay shooting. Because the rumor is that Harrison Ford, or Han Solo's character, or the character of Han Solo, is actually a major player in Star Wars Episode 7. Apparently, Leia and Luke are actually glorified cameos, but Han Solo is a major character in it, which kind of goes back to an original rumor. Rumors within rumors. Yeah, it's like Inception. Original rumor,
an
which
enigma
was
wrapped in a riddle.
The original rumor was that Harrison Ford had originally lobbied for Han Solo way back in Star Wars, in Return of the Jedi, that he wanted Han Solo to go out in a blaze of glory. Mm-hmm. He wanted him killed, and of course that never happened. It looks, the rumor has it that J.J. Abrams is going to give him his blaze of glory death, and that's one of the things that's going to be in this film.
Can I say that this article goes on to say that apparently that they're looking at a May 4th, 2016 release date.
May the 4th!
Yeah. May the 4th, which would put it up against the same week as Captain America 3, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, and a couple of weeks before...
And I'm going
to
say...
And a couple of weeks before X-Men Apocalypse. Just to go... So you go on.
I'm going to say right now, if that is true, if this does happen, if this becomes official, watch how many of these movies flee from that date.
But they're also saying that this is substantiating the rumor before that Annette Cool News and Badass Digest have had a couple of rumors about the plot, which apparently will find Han Solo leading a bunch of youngsters throughout the galaxy to find Luke Skywalker, in which case Ford's injury is a problem because he is the major player.
He's the major player.
And that would substantiate the idea that Luke and Leia are cameos.
Now, we will stress for the record that we have no evidence or proof of any of this news.
We don't know what the hell is going on.
Because JJ is really good at keeping a set locked down. So. Yeah. We don't know at this point. We haven't even been given a synopsis.
And there are a lot of suggestions that he could just show up and shoot from the waist up. Mm. But from personal experience, I can tell you that's not a good idea.
Well, JJ,
he won't be able to focus on any scene.
He'll get some stunt legs in.
Yeah, JJ just won't even be able to talk.
Did read something that said that JJ was continuing to shoot. Because they're shooting around Harrison Ford at the moment, but they're going to get to a point where they can't shoot anymore.
The question is, did JJ shoot first?
Well, I suppose, what's the release date projected? December next year, right?
May.
Originally,
December 18th next year. So we're talking less than 18 months from the original release date.
Theoretically, if he's back after 6 months even, what they could do is they could complete the rest of the film.
Pretty much.
It's a major risky move to do, like to do all the effects and everything else. Except for the shots of him. It's almost like a glorified pickup.
True. But what I am going to say, what I am going to say, though, is that Star Wars actually belongs in May. The fact that they've delayed it to May,
Here's a crazy rumor that I'm just going to create now.
Oh, good for you.
Maybe Tom Cruise is there to be a strong actor, so the other actors have something else to act opposite of.
He's a stand-in.
He's a glorified stand-in for Harrison Ford. And then, so all the other actors, all the reaction shots are taken.
Because they're all going, oh my God, that's Tom Cruise.
Yeah, yeah. And instead of, oh my God, it's Harrison Ford. And then they insert Harrison Ford later in.
Well, he's friends with JJ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
who knows?
And they produce movies together.
He could just be doing it as a favor.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because apparently he's quite a nice guy.
That's a wonderful group of rumors that we have no proof of whatsoever.
No, but it gave us an excuse to play the Imperial March.
It did, and I'm going to play it every week that I can.
We'll create rumors.
You know what we haven't thought of this rumors. Week at all? What's we don't that? Have closing music for this show.
No, we haven't. We can put something in post.
We'll make something up. We'll just add something in because
we thought of something last night.
The music is very, very rarely relevant to the show anyway. So it doesn't really matter. Now, let's move on to what we've been watching.
You're right.
I'm watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
We're such a professional. We're such a professional outfit. We really are.
What are we watching, guys?
mostly because the first movie I'm going to talk about is this.
Bring it up. All the way.
Dad, you can't keep spending money on junk.
So... that was a bit of the trailer for Transformers.
The most relevant part.
Age of Extinction, which is I got to see on Monday, last Monday in IMAX.
And, I was working.
It's now in cinemas around the world and earning gajillions of dollars.
I was working too, yeah. No, I really was.
Hardly working. Working hard or hardly working,
boys? To be honest, I was invited to the screening. I was actually working.
Look, I was there with a bunch of people.
I think I RSVP'd, so I cost some people their seats. I think.
It wasn't. The cinema wasn't full. I can tell you that.
I'm not surprised.
There was two empty seats next to you.
Yeah. It was a bit... I was keeping them warm for you fellas. Yeah. That's what I always do. It's kind of a tradition of mine. Whenever I go and see a movie, I buy two extra seats for the two of you, even if you're not coming.
Yeah.
Just as kind of, and I put like, you know, on one seat, I put a little, choc top. And a pack of Maltesers.
Yep.
A bucket of KFC chicken for me.
A bucket of KFC chicken. It, you know, everyone else in the cinema is like, what's that smell? And I said, that's Dave Longo.
Richard just eats the KFC the whole movie and just progressively shouts
out. It's been
out,
15
Damn!
Years. It's been 15 years since I've eaten KFC, and that was an anniversary I had a few weeks ago. So,
yeah.
Look, I actually, God help me, I liked Transformers Age of Extinction a lot more than the last
Get out
couple.
Of my show.
Look, it's by no means a good film at all. Like, it is, there is one point in the film where they're driving along and and there's just like this giant ship above them, and they're going, what is it doing? It's picking up metal and dropping it down again. And that line is only purely there so you know that at some stage all the metal stuff that they've got will be lifted up and dropped. And when you think about it, there is no purpose for the Decepticons or whoever is invading to be picking metal up and dropping it again. Like, what purpose would that serve?
That sounds amazing.
You know,
I'm going to see this tonight.
Yeah, but can we go tonight? We should so
go. Marky Mark, I'm not seeing it again. Marky Mark. Marky Mark is a.
But what about the bees?
Is a much.
I don't want to hurt you. I just want to talk to you, okay?
We got a Transformer here, guys. He's a much
Becky
better,
Lynn, Jamie Lynn.
He's a much better, yeah, Ted. He's a much better lead than Shia LaBeouf. So it is a better film on that level. The problem is that Michael Bay does not know how to...
No, I think you can end right there.
The problem is Michael Bay. But specifically, the only thing I will say is that he doesn't know how to stage any suspense whatsoever, because there is a point, and we know from the trailers the Dinobots are in this, right?
Right.
So there's a point where Optimus Prime has to go off and convince the Dinobots to join him, and he does, okay? Because you know they join up because it's in the trailer. Right.
Well, you see him beating the crap out of him.
There's also, if you've gone into any cinema, there's a giant cardboard cutout of Optimus Prime riding a Dinobot. Can you answer this
for me? Does Optimus actually ride?
Yes, he does.
I'm going to go see it.
But the thing is, he's already teamed up and they've settled up on the back of the Dinobots. And then you cut back to the city and all the other Autobots are going, we're dying. This is our last shot. We've got no backup whatsoever. We already know at this point that he's teamed up with the Dinobots. So there's no suspense whatsoever. You go, this is the point where there they are heroically riding in. And it's like, if they hadn't teamed up and it was like, you know, will they, won't they, what's going to happen? And
then suddenly, he could have ridden in.
It's like that moment in the Two Towers
where Gandalf suddenly rides in
and we didn't know what was coming. And like, unless you read the book. No, but I mean, like, you know, I had read the award-winning Pulitzer Prize-winning novel *Transformers: Age of Extinction*, which I think that was Cormac McCarthy wrote that.
Richard, three questions, and this will decide if it's good for me.
Yes.
One. Does shit blow up?
I think so. Yes.
Two. Does shit blow up?
Well, when you say does shit blow up, are you talking about actual shit blowing up?
Kabooms, explosions.
Yeah, I remember that.
Are there machines turning into robots?
He's killing this.
Yes.
Depends on how you define machines.
From a certain, point of view.
Are they aliens or are they robots?
I was going to say cars, but Transformers don't always turn into cars.
Kind of, from my memory, they're robots in disguise.
Okay.
Is there Energon cubes in it?
It's what we call our spirit. No, it's what we call the spark. The great spark is referenced in there.
Is there robot heaven?
You got the touch.
The biggest question is it worth going to see? And how many, how many Transformer testicles would you give this out of 5?
I'd give it 3 Transformer testicles, dog.
I have a burning question, though, and then we can move on.
Yeah.
Is there robot heaven? And does a human go to robot heaven?
Ooh,
remember that magical scene in Transformers 2?
Tried to put 2 Transformers 2 out of my mind.
Do you not even remember that? That is magical. Where Shia LaBeouf wakes up in the robot heaven.
I remember.
Oh,
I'm going to answer that. Trying to put it out of my mind.
I'm going to answer that the following way. I've been to robot heaven, but I've never been to me.
I have been told that the second best Transformers movie.
After
the first one.
I didn't like the first one that much, to be honest.
You didn't like the first one?
No.
Oh, see, I really enjoyed the
first one. I liked the second one even less. And there were moments I enjoyed in the third one.
Yeah, her butt walking up the stairs.
Yeah.
But that was about it.
In this movie, there was a giant, like they're driving through somewhere and there's like a giant Victoria's Secret ad just plonked in the middle of somewhere. God. There is more product placement in this than a James Bond film.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. So you're giving it 3?
Yeah, because I kind of enjoyed it.
Okay.
Ironically, maybe.
It's
not ironically.
It's the grown-ups too.
No, I just at some point I'm just going to give up and just go, you know what? Fuck it. Shit blew up. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah. Cool. All right. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that.
I saw another movie this week by an equally famed director, the Michael Bay of the Westerns. Let's play a little bit of a clip.
Frankie, the world is going to hear that voice.
You want me to produce your songs?
Find a name and a sound, and then we can make something happen. Listen, we got something for you, all right? Sherry.
Set up the 8-track. We're going to double Frankie's voice. It's going to explode right off the radio.
Sherry. Is that a different sound? I love this record.
We do everything together.
How old are you?
Together or separately?
Big girls.
Success now. The records, the TV, the personal appearances.
Do you know how I know you like this film better than Transformers? You played
more
than
the trailer. Okay, look, it's no secret. I love Jersey Boys, the musical. I saw it 3 times on stage here in Sydney and went and stood outside the West End building when I was over there as well. It's a very straightforward musical. A lot of people will hate it. Like traditional musical people don't like it because it's a jukebox musical. It's barely got a story in it. It's just kind of like a narrative spoken to the audience between it. And they kind of use that in the film as well. They have a lot of direct-to-camera stuff. So it feels a little bit Goodfellas-y in that sense. But it's a little less joyous than the stage musical because rather than having big musical pieces like in, say, Hairspray, it's actually just... when they're performing on camera, when they're recording, when they're on tour. In the stage musical, they often used thematic pieces. Like, for example, when one of the band members, when Bob Gaudio loses, who's the guy who actually, trivia note, was the guy that wrote Who Loves Short Shorts, who wears short shorts, joined the Four Seasons. When he loses his virginity, they play December, you know, Oh What a Night. And they go, and, you know, they wink to the audience like, I recall it ended much too soon, you know, that kind of thing. But here it's kind of like chronological when they recorded the songs. The only time it gets really joyous is like the very final closing credits thing. They have a big musical medley number where all the cast and, you know, come out and dance and sing. But I enjoyed the hell out of this movie because I like the music. I like the actors. They use a lot of the actors from the various stage versions. But, of course, the addition of this is Christopher Walken. As the mob boss, it's like, Frankie, I want you to play my mother's eyes. And then you get to walk around doing Jersey accents the rest of the day. My hand to God, I swear, this is the best film I have seen, hands down, this year. Oh, my, oh.
Hey.
Hey. Oh. Oh. What are you talking about, Frankie? But look, I loved it. The people I saw it with really didn't like it. The thing is, Clint Eastwood's directing is like the most no-frills thing you ever see. Like he sticks the camera in front of the actors, which is a weird choice for a Broadway musical adaptation to get someone who's just going to point the camera and go. Jon Favreau was originally signed on to this
really?
A long, long time ago. And he's obviously gone off and done Chef, which is still one of my favorite films this year, if not my favorite film this year.
It's one of mine, yeah.
You know, and thank you, Dave, for recommending that to us. Look, I love this. I'm going to give it...
Let me just preempt that by saying, out of how many seasons would you give it?
I'm going to give this... 4 seasons, David. That's exactly what I was
thinking. Aye, aye, aye.
Did I ever tell you the story I read about Clint Eastwood?
I wonder why.
One of my favorite anecdotes.
He lies about his age.
No. One of my favorite anecdotes about Clint Eastwood was an article when he was actually in the Line of Fire. And he was Wolfgang Petersen? Yeah, Wolfgang Petersen was directing
was
in Renier the line.
Wolfcastle.
Was directing it. And Clint Eastwood was actually saying that he's a very different director to Wolfgang Petersen because Wolfgang Petersen would take dozens of takes of things and make sure everything was absolutely perfect. And when they were asking Clint Eastwood about his style, basically it was more, he had a much more casual sense of being a director where he would actually shoot a scene and at the end of the scene he would say, can you see me? Am I in focus? Let's move on. You know? So it's like, and I just love it.
Can we get all four seasons in the shot?
He's got a much more casual approach to directing than.
So Jersey Boys was shot in a day. He just put the camera down.
It really is. It's very straightforward, but I really enjoyed it. And, excellent. You know, so. Okay, I mean, I'm a fanboy.
I'm not quite the fanboy you are, but I am curious to see it. But we all went to see a movie this week.
Finally, we all got to see a film that was released a few weeks ago. Let's play the show.
I know, we were late on this.
Yeah. We were very late on this one, but it is, for some reason, our featured review this week.
What I am about to tell you sounds crazy. But you have to listen to me. Your very lives depend on it.
This is not the end.
Come find me when you wake up!
Man, what an anticlimax. I was waiting for the crescendo.
I know, I can play more if you want.
No, it's all right.
But Edge of Tomorrow was the name of the movie. We actually had a lot of texts. I don't know if I'm still at Christopher Walken. We had a lot of texts about this week from Alessio, one of our listeners. Who has was talking about it and its original title in the Japanese novel, All You Need Is Kill.
I actually really want to read it.
Which
one? All You Need Is Kill.
Kill. Da, 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 da.
Kill is all you need. There's no one you can kill that can't be killed. This is a Tom Cruise film, Emily Blunt. Let's just think about Emily Blunt for a moment, shall we? When you wake up,
come find me.
When I wake up, the first thing I think about is going and finding Emily Blunt.
Mostly you know, Full Metal Bitch.
Full Metal Bitch, Emily Blunt. When she's about to pass out, she eats a cube of cheese. As you recall.
What was that?
I was just going with it.
Devil Wears Prada, hello.
That was so random.
Whatever, it's not up with all
that was great,
the modern cultural references, dude.
It's a great film, by the way, dude.
I should watch
It's even better than Edge of Tomorrow in some ways. But I really like this film because it is. How did you describe it, David?
It is Groundhog Day with aliens and guns.
And why not?
No.
Look, he's not a god. He's just been around for a very long time.
It is a really good film. I really enjoyed it. I started seeing all the Rotten Tomato results and the reviews coming out. And I'm going, really? This is getting really
it's
well.
It's like 90 on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's getting
at the
really well reviewed. And I thought, this is really remarkable. Now, it didn't do very much business in the States. It got slaughtered by another film. I can't remember what the other film was, but it came out and got slaughtered by it. But worldwide, it's picking up its business. And
you were saying, Dave, in Asia it's been quite successful.
And it deserves it because it is actually a really clever film.
No, we were talking about that before. It's the same deal with Pacific Rim, again, to harp on Pacific Rim. But it's like, in America, these movies underperform, and it's kind of because, you know, the Americans aren't the leads of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, America's not saving the world this time.
It's a film set in London. It's the London, you know, a lot of British
and
actors.
Emily Blunt, thankfully, plays British, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah. And let's just take a moment.
And there's a lot of Australians
like
in
Emily Blunt for a minute. Anyway,
there was a lot of Australians in the film too. Did you guys notice that there were a lot of Australians?
Well, Noah Wiley was
in it. What's his name? Kit Gurry, I think.
Yeah. And then again, Australian accents because it was meant to be
a good international cast.
Task force that was working together for this thing.
And can we just say, Bill Paxton?
I love that expression on Bill Paxton's face when he starts to recite back at him because he's repeated so many times. He's like, huh?
Yeah, just kind of this little.
I had no idea he was in the movie. And then when he popped up, it was magic.
Yeah. I mean, there are all these really magical
moments. And I agree, Emily
Blunt
was the shit.
She was great.
Everything about that character was amazing. It's so good as well to see a female, barring one scene, but we maybe won't talk about that. But like, strongest female character in a movie in ages.
Absolutely. And look, you know, let's just put this out there. Like all this bullshit about, you know, a female-led action film can't work. Well, we've got this as evidence. We've got Hunger Games as evidence. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, the Tomb Raider films are really great, you know, evidence. The Alien films are all evidence, you know. Let's just stop dicking around. Let's just get a Wonder Woman film out there. Let's get a Captain Marvel film
Let's get Emily Blunt as Captain Marvel.
I'll be down for that. I'm going to throw it out there as well because I didn't hate Salt. So,
hey, yeah, Salt.
Salt?
Yeah. I quite like Salt.
There you go. Anything with Angelina Jolie action film.
Yeah, she kicks ass well.
No, look, Emily Blunt yeah, gorgeous. Like, we all agree.
Look, Emily Blunt is not only gorgeous, but she is a magnificent actress.
God damn, we got to give credit to that performance.
Yeah, she is a magnificent really good actress. She was great in The Adjustment Bureau. She was great in Prada. She is a great actress. And she throws herself into this wholeheartedly. And this is an actress who basically said that she would never do this kind of film. And she's showing up and she's doing it. And she's pulling her A game.
But she can do all sorts of genres as well. I mean, I wasn't the biggest fan of The 5-Year Engagement.
But she was great.
But she was great in it. Yeah. The movie went on too long. It's the problem there. Absolutely. But
it's actor's karma, because remember there was that whole deal with the Fox contract that stopped her from being in what was the first Black Widow? Iron Man 2. She was the original choice for Iron Man 2 to play Black Widow. Fox pulled her out of it to do Gulliver's Travels.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. That's right.
And that was a big deal, because she could have been Black Widow, and you know what happened with that.
Yeah.
And so this is the actor's karma of like...
She could have an electric motorbike between her legs right now.
She could. See behind the panels, issue 99.
Yes, absolutely. Inside joke. But look, I really enjoyed this film. If I have any niggles about this film, is the ending. And we're only
Can you use that word? Niggles?
What? Niggles? Why not?
I don't know. I don't know if you can use that word on air.
I'm not saying anything bad.
The ending.
Look, at the ending. It's not even the conclusion of the film. It's the world War of the Worlds problem. The conclusion of the film happens, and then they tack on this one scene at the end. And you sit there and go, you didn't need it.
Because if the rest of the movie wasn't so strong, it would have really soured.
It sort of goes against the spirit of the rest of the film in a lot of ways. Yeah.
And so it's just that last minute. That last beat of the film. And it's not terrible, it's just not required. You know? And it kind of doesn't make any sense.
But it does make sense, but I do like it when he walks in and that little smile that crosses his face, and that was a good way to end it. But you're saying this is kind of like a Doug Liman problem more than anything.
Doug Liman has a bit of a history of not being able to end his films. Case in point, go watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Spoilers for a film that's a few years old, but Mr. and Mrs. Smith ends in a huge gunfight. They're sitting there, they have this moment together, and then they jump out Butch Cassidy style to face off the hordes of SWAT guys, and then suddenly we cut to them sitting in a chair going, well, that's what married life's like, blah, blah, blah. You sit there and go, that's it? That's the ending you're going to give us? And he does this time and time again. I think Doug Liman really needs to figure out his endings a little bit. I didn't like the film very much, but Jumper had a terrible ending too. I think the last decent ending he had was Born Identity. Oh, hello.
Sorry, wrong one.
There is, with Edge of Tomorrow, there is a strange sort of like lack of confidence in that ending too.
Yeah.
It does seem to end definitively. And then there's this 1 minute.
And I don't
want to
spoil the ending for it.
Because do you guys remember the Ridley Scott movie Matchstick Men?
Yes.
Matchstick Men went from being one of the best movies I was watching to being just abysmal in the span of a minute.
Oh, really? I didn't mind the ending.
Because the ending of Matchstick Men really soured me on that movie. And I've gone back since and watched it. I really love Matchstick Men. But that's how I feel about this, because that ending of Matchstick Men...
That's what we end the show with today.
Yeah. No, I thought you were going to build up to that, weren't you? Yeah, like, but anyway, like, with the ending of Matchstick Men, that was done after a reshoot when...
Save that.
That was done as a reshoot, the ending of Matchstick Men, because test audiences reacted really poorly because it was a sad and, you know, depressing ending. Whereas that's how I feel about this.
Yeah,
it might just be this lack of either it's a response to a test screening or it's
I actually think the ending of Edge of Tomorrow feels like the response of a test screening.
Yeah,
without doubt, I feel like the studio went. I have a funny feeling, and this is minor spoiler, but I have a funny feeling the ending was supposed to be a little bit darker than what is on screen, because it kind of is building to that, and then we tack on the Hollywood ending, and that kind of annoyed me a little bit. And I think it's a small price. This is a really good film, and you shouldn't let that end.
A magnificent film.
It's so well executed,
and the sets are just astonishing as well.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking just that the editing and storytelling in this, the idea of repeating time, it's a hard job to do. Harold Ramis did it really well with Groundhog Day, and he's doing it really well here. That whole idea of,
and the whole like sort of revealing to you over time, like
The
little twists, like they feel like it's the first repeat, but it's not the first repeat.
There's a great line where they're sitting at that barn and he's making her coffee and stuff. Like, you see a little bit of it in the trailer. But I love the conclusion of that scene where she basically suddenly stops and goes, how many times have we been here? Yeah. You know? And that's kind of what this film is magnificent at, because you sit there and go, yeah, they've been here a lot.
And it's written by Christopher McQuarrie, like a script writing genius. And like, you know, you can see it all throughout the movie. And that's what's so disappointing about that trailer that came out, was that I think all the great things about this movie are not in that trailer or not communicated well. Like the strength of Emily Blunt's character, I don't think is communicated that well in the trailer. Like Tom Cruise being a coward at the beginning of the movie and turning into the Tom Cruise that we know.
In the trailer, he just looks like a soldier.
Yeah, and that's the big thing as well, is the humor. Like this movie is like incredibly funny.
It's got a lot of good humor.
And it's really fast and it's well paced. It's not the like, this is how it is.
This is really interesting, just about the book ending, and I don't know if you guys want to hear.
No, I do. I do want to know how it ends. But maybe we shouldn't say on here.
Well, we could. Well, massive spoiler warning.
Okay.
Massive spoiler warning. I'm interested. We have spoiler music.
We do have a spoiler thing. Here is a bit of spoiler.
That's right, kiddies. I'm the spoiler.
Okay, so as we always say, if you don't want to hear about this, we're only going to spoil for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then you can come back to the show, okay? Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Okay, this is an article over on Cinema Blend where they say, in the book, there's a different set of rules involving the aliens. While they're still called mimics instead of Amigas and Alphas, there are servers and backups and antennas, and if a person inherits the day resetting power, they can't lose it with a blood transfusion. Without going into the complicated specifics about how looping works and All You Need Is Kill, we'll skip to the ending, which reveals that Rita has become an antenna, which means that the mimics are still able to loop. After Keiji kills the server, the Keiji and Rita are the names of the characters in there, Rita lures him into a fight and reveals that Keiji has to kill her in order to end the loop. If he dies, it's forever. If she dies, the loop will end, so will the war eventually. Only one of them can escape either way. Keiji reluctantly fights back, beats her, and kills her.
Wow.
So it's a much darker ending.
That's why they couldn't film it for the American audience. Wow.
So, interesting.
Okay.
I thought that was quite interesting. So do you want to get back into
take us out because we get back to the show.
Stop the spoiler. Or does he?
I've not heard that before.
That's awesome. I haven't heard the exit. Yeah. okay, so out of I don't know, what are we going to? What is our measurement?
How many tomorrows?
out of five tomorrows.
How many edges does this tomorrow have?
How much do you need to kill?
Yeah. No, I think.
Wait, how much kill do you need?
All of it? Some of it?
Out of tomorrow, out of five tomorrows, how many edges will you give this?
I will give this I'll give this a 4-edge tomorrow.
I will give this a 4-edge tomorrow as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4.5.
Four and a half
edges. Just because of this one scene.
Is one of those edges like a little bit. Ending. It's one of those edges a little bit blunt.
Oh!
No, it was a poor choice. Let's leave it at that. The scene I'm talking about is a poor choice.
The ending?
The ending.
No, the other scene. But we'll talk about
okay.
it.
Okay, we'll
it's not a big deal. it's where the movie goes romantic, where it shouldn't have gone romantic.
Yeah, there's a whole
running
episode
thing in there,
to be had here about gender politics in this film as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Richard seems to know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
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 Fair enough. Alright.
I don't want to spoil it because it will ruin it for everybody.
No, and I think everybody should
we
go.
We should have talked about
I think
it.
And I'll have to open up the spoiler vault
again.
Exactly.
Whatever.
And it's quite dusty in there. So I'm just not, you know.
It's only like a 30-second thing, so.
On that note, and on that conclusion, we're gonna go have birthday cakes. So we are going to finish this show up. Unless you have anything more to add?
No, other than that, we won't be here next week because David and I will be in Melbourne.
That's me.
So if you get to this show before Friday the 4th of July through to Monday the 7th of July.
I might actually push this episode out a little early.
Then you will know that we'll be in Melbourne. So if you want to come and meet us at Oz Comic Con, I'll be there all weekend. David and I will both be there on the Saturday. Mm-hmm. But we're doing a fan meet-up-y thing kind of around the Alien screening at the Astor Theatre.
Yeah, I've got a lot to do in Melbourne over the weekend, so I'll only really be
so
at the con Saturday morning.
And we've got interviews on Friday. Yeah. And I've got a screening on Monday morning. So, like, yeah, the con's the best place to meet us. And if you can't, just give us a message on any of the feedback channels, and we'll see if we can do
it. We have thought about doing a meetup in a coffee shop or something like that. So if we get enough interest in that, we might.
I'm sure one of the evenings we can do something.
Yeah, so we'll see what we can do. But we're going to be in Melbourne next weekend, so there won't be a show, as we said at the beginning. We're going to be off at Oz Comic Con. But until 2 weeks from now when we reconvene, we're going to close the clubhouse meeting. You can find a little bit more of me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. Please follow me because, you know, that's where I'm kind of chit-chatting all the time. Richard?
You can find more of me at DVDBits on Twitter, and I'm there a lot. You can also find me online at therealbits.com. That's therelbits.com or, of course, behindthepanels.net. And I want to say, just while we're talking about Behind the Panels, if you don't listen to that show, you only listen to GMC. Our next episode we come back with is our 100th episode spectacular. So we should be getting a reasonably good interview.
Not building that up at all.
No. Look, the last, our 50th episode spectacular, we pretty much played clips of ourselves. But that was fun. So
we're going to try and get a little bit more than just playing clips of ourselves.
If you don't listen to that show, it's like Oprah's Book Club for Nerds.
And if you don't listen to that show, it's a travesty and you should be ashamed of yourself.
You should go out and kill yourself. No, don't.
No, you just reset.
I'll just reset. No, it doesn't work that way, kids.
Dave.
Okay, I'm Dave Longo. You can find me at Dave Longo on Twitter and come find me when you wake up.
All right, so we're going to bring this clubhouse.
He'll be sitting right next to you.
Right next to Emily Blunt, apparently.
How many fingers am I holding up? How many fingers am I holding up, Richard?
That'd be one.
Yeah. At the moment.
Yeah, fuck you. You guys know the fans love me the most, so good night.
It's actually true.
All right, we're going to go out with a little bit of Moby, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, we are too.
We're going to go out with a little bit of Moby.
Richard's brilliant.
Until the next show, I'm Dave McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
Dave Logo.
And we really don't know how to end this.
Like Doug Liman.
Thank you.